Here's an important principle when it comes to saving money. If your frugality efforts don't save a ton of money, they better be easy. If they're not easy, they better save a ton. Hey, it's Matthew, and this is the Matthew Kent Show. So I call the strategy of focusing on frugal wins that are easy but don't save you that much money, quick wins. So the idea here is that you have two areas that are worth focusing on in frugality: quick wins and big wins. Big wins save you a lot, but they're pretty difficult. Quick wins save you a little, but they're relatively easy. Now, of course, you can have a 2x2 grid here of saving a lot or saving a little, and having the difficulty be easy or hard. You have these two variables and you get this little quadrant. Quick wins is one quadrant, big wins is another quadrant. You also have efforts that save you only a little bit of money and are hard and not worth your time, and so we call these time wasters. So an example of this would be some kind of hyper frugal strategy like turning double ply toilet paper into single ply toilet paper by hand. Good luck with that. Have fun. Enjoy your life. You also have the theoretical potential to have something that saves you a lot of money and is easy to do. Now, I call this a unicorn because if they weren't rare, I mean, then saving money would just be outrageously easy. And of course, if you have stories of unicorns, hit me up. You can leave me a voicemail. Anchor.fm/Matthew Kent. Is the homepage for this podcast, and there should be tools there to get in touch with me. If you have examples where you saved a lot of money and it was easy, I'd love to hear about it. But unfortunately, I don't think there's going to be a lot of examples here that are applicable for everybody and just universally available. And if there were, people wouldn't be Google searching about how to save money and thinking about it, and I wouldn't need to make podcasts like this. It would just be, well, saving money would be easy. So we have these two different approaches that we can use, the big wins and the quick wins. And of course, I recommend starting with the quick wins just because it's nice to get some quick wins. Now, the main strategy, there's different strategies that you can use for quick wins and to think about. There's one main strategy that I advocate, and the reason that I advocate it is that I think it's going to work for most people. But let me just add the caveat that it works better if you've been in the real world, so to speak, for a little while. So if you're 22 years old and you just graduated college, chances are your lifestyle is pretty cheap already, and you might benefit a little bit from this quick wins exercise, but not nearly as much as somebody who's, I don't know, maybe let's say 30 and has been working for a while, has been sort of accumulating all of these bills and all of these expenses. Because the strategy is we're going to tackle your fixed costs, your bills and your expenses that come up every month, or in some cases, you know, every 6 months or every year, depending on how often you're paying these things. And we're going to find a way to make all of this cheaper. And the goal here is that we're going to be able to do all of this in just a couple of days. So, you know, this is not going to be something that stretches out forever and ever. You might revisit it. And I, you know, this is something that I did years ago and got myself into a good position. And I revisit it from time to time, and it's worth revisiting from time to time. But in general, we're going to think of it as a very contained sort of micro project, something that I call it a weekend. You could do it in a weekend. In practice, you might actually do it over the course of a couple weekdays in case you're the kind of person who likes to call people up and you want to work during normal business hours. Now, I know that, you know, I'm recording this in 2021. No one likes calling anybody on the phone. I don't like calling people on the phone. My gosh, I hate it. I do it sometimes, but I hate it so much. I can't even explain why. I have no idea why I get so afraid before I call somebody up. I have no idea why it's so awkward for me. Maybe it's awkward for you too. I feel like for my parents' generation, this was like no big deal. It's like you called, you know, 8 different people every single day. it's a different time. Who knows how that happened? But anyways, the point here is that, listen, frugality is not about being cheap. So when we talk about saving money, you know, we're not talking about, you know, destroying your life for the sake of pinching pennies here. You know, and it's not that you're afraid to spend money, or it's not that you're just completely unwilling to spend money. You know, I love the book Your Money or Your Life by Joe Dominguez and Vicky Robin. And one of the main contributions that it made to the way I think about personal finance is they define money as your life energy. In other words, they're like, hey, you know, there's a lot of ways that people like to define it, and the boring, you know, economist way of defining it of like, well, a store of value or a medium of exchange, which are boring and worthless. But they're like, in practice, what do? Is like you trade your life energy. You go to work, you know, whatever, to get money. So the way to think about money is that money represents your life energy. And so frugality, when you're doing it right, when you're saving money right, it's when you're acting out of a recognition that like, hey, this money that I'm paying towards these bills, this cost me my life energy to acquire. And so I'm not just gonna throw it away. I'm not gonna flush it down the toilet, just, you know, haphazardly. Like I'm gonna consciously spend it. And also I have these financial goals. Maybe it's financial independence. Maybe it's something, you know, of wanting to, you know, support your kids or move into a bigger house or whatever your goals are. So you have these goals, and it's like the only way you're gonna meet your goals is if you're conscious with your spending. So just everything in life behooves you to be careful, be cautious with how you spend money. And the most unconscious spending that you engage in is the recurring payments that just sort of automatically deduct from your bank account or get charged to your credit card. These things, you know, I'm talking things that like happen in the background. And in many cases for you, it actually doesn't even matter if you're getting, you know, this service from a different company. Or if you're getting a slightly different service, you know, it's stuff like your car insurance and things like that. And so this money's just, it's leaving your life automatically without you having to even pay it. And it's frictionless. And I mean, the people who set up automatic payments love them because they know that that these payments are sticky, that it's unlikely that you're gonna just call up and cancel. Now, people do, and they're aware of that, and it's called churn, and it's part of their business model. But in general, a bunch of people, even who don't need the service, you know, you think of something like a, you know, streaming music service that you don't use or something like that. Like people will just sign up for it, stop using it, or especially gym memberships are like this. You know, you sign up for the gym membership, you stop going to the gym, but you never cancel, and of course, they make it difficult for you to cancel. So again, the way to think about this is sort of like a mini project where you're gonna. We'll call it you're going to optimize your bills, and you're going to take like a weekend to do this. Because having to cut back on your day in, day out spending is, you know, not, I'm not going to say it's a not a worthwhile endeavor. It is. It's just hard because you have to bring renewed focus and attention to it. And we've talked about how, you know, time and energy and money are sort of our three resources. So you're having to use, you know, ongoing time and ongoing attention or energy. To cut back on your day-to-day spending. Whereas here with this quick wins mini project, you know, you just have to sort of make a couple key decisions up front and then you kind of save money month over month on autopilot. So the main strategy I'm going to outline at the beginning and then we'll go through it after the ad break in a little bit more detail. So you're gonna the first step really is to, you know, go and look at your credit card statements or your bank statements. Or if you have a tool that, like I recommend, Personal Capital, where you can see all your money in one place, you know, all your credit cards, all your investment accounts, all your bank accounts, just everything. And you're gonna look for all of the recurring bills that you're paying for. And so, you know, make a list of all of these bills, and what you're gonna do is you're gonna ask yourself the following questions for each one. Can I cancel it altogether is the first question. Now, obviously, in some cases, like with car insurance, the answer is going to be no. It's required by law. You can't cancel it. With something like a streaming service, you can be like, yeah, I could cancel this. You might not want to, so I'm not saying you absolutely need to if you can, but you want to ask yourself that question for every single one. The second question is, can I get a similar service from a cheaper competitor? The third question is, can I downgrade my service to save money? The fourth is, can I bundle with another service to save money? The fifth is, can I change my payment schedule to save money? And then finally, can I negotiate this bill and make it lower? Can I negotiate this down? So those are questions you're going to ask for every single one. And we'll go through in detail. We'll apply those because those questions interact differently with some of the expenses that you might have. And so, you know, when I talk about your expenses, I'm thinking things like car insurance, your internet bill is definitely a big one. Your phone, my gosh, I know every single one of you out there has a phone. Probably you're listening to me on a phone. Gym membership, if you have one, maybe you don't. I'm talking about cable, whether like traditional cable, but then also, you know, Netflix, Hulu, Disney Plus, Amazon Prime, streaming services. I guess Amazon Prime also does other stuff, but, and you know, I mean, I'm thinking about those miscellaneous subscriptions too. So, you know, when we talk about magazines and newspapers, if anybody still subscribes to those, or journals or streaming audio, you know, Spotify, YouTube Music, that kind of thing. Newsletters that you have to pay for. I know that's a big business model nowadays, and Substack, and people are charging for newsletters, or Patreon or whatever. Food delivery services, or those, you know, like monthly mystery box of goods things. There's like a little box with just random stuff shows up at your house. All those kind of things are the things that I'm thinking about. So we're going to take all of those bills that you have. You're going to track them down. You're going to make a list of all of them, and you're going to apply these questions, the six questions that we went over to each one, and you're going to try to save some money. Now, when I think about this, you know, I always like to think about the math. So the math is pretty simple. You might not be able to hit this goal, but it's worthwhile to have a goal. So what would it take to save $1,000 a year by cutting down on your bills? And so the surprising answer is that 1,000 divided by 12 is only $83.34. It's 83.3333 repeating. And so, I mean, you could round that down. Just to be conservative, we'll round it up to $83.34. If you can save $83.34 off of your monthly bills, you'll save up $1,000 each year. So $1,000, it's not life-changing, obviously, but that's nothing to scoff at. And like, man, if you can, you know, let's call it, if you can save, would that be $166.68? You know, you're saving $2,000 a year. So that's a little bit harder with this strategy, unless you've gotten to the point where just, and this happens to some people, you know, that this bill creep where you've just been paying without thinking about it and adding services and upgrading services when it wasn't necessary, and not shopping around, and all this kind of thing. And maybe you are at the point where you could save multiple thousands of dollars. I think for most people, $1,000 is a good stretch goal. But listen, $1,000 saved over the course of a year with one weekend of work is a pretty good return on your investment for most people. So that's why we're going to start here. And in many of these cases, you know, I mean, you're going to keep saving money, not just for 1 year, but month after month for a much longer period of time. Some of them, like, you know, car insurance, maybe it's only really for a year, and then they jack the prices back up, and then you have to look again. But, I mean, in general, a lot of these have the potential to keep saving money, and some of them you'll have to revisit. So let's take a break, and then let's dive right in. Okay, let's start by talking about car insurance. This is the 21st century. So many of us have cars. I have a love-hate relationship with cars. You know, I mean, cars can be great and fun, and they're definitely convenient. But at the same time, it's like when you have cars, it's like you have to design your society around cars. And so you have to build a lot of parking lots, and that makes everything further apart, and roads and all of these kind of things. And then it becomes like a self-fulfilling thing, a self-perpetuating problem, that you can't get around without a car, and that you can't find parking. And then they've got to do the whole thing where it's like they continue to optimize society for cars, which continues to make it more unwalkable. Ugh. Anyways, though, I have a car. I like my car. But you have this expense, this ongoing expense called car insurance. And so you ask the first question, can I cancel it altogether? And unfortunately, we've covered this already, but most of the time the answer is no. If you have a car, carrying insurance is required by law. Now, if you're a two-car family, like I am, and you can figure out a way to become a one-car family, which I wouldn't even call that a quick win. I'd call that a big win. But in this case, you can then also get the quick win of canceling the car insurance, obviously, for the car that you got rid of, the car that you sold. So that's where I'm at right now. We're a two-car family, but then since I've been working at home since, you know, March of 2020, I'm looking to get rid of my car, or I'm thinking about it. It's a weird thing where it's like, I don't know right now, this is May of 2021, if they're going to, you know, make everybody come back into work. But if I can, I'm going to get rid of the car. So second question would be, can I get a similar service from a cheaper competitor? And of course, this is probably the best way to go when it comes to car insurance. So there's a couple different strategies here. You can call around and get quotes from several companies. And this is the whole, you know, Geico does the commercials with a little gecko. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. I'm sorry to everyone in the UK for my terrible accent there. I'm sorry. Everyone else, you're welcome. Are you not entertained? Oh, Gladiator was a great movie. Anyways, okay. Call around and try to get the best deal. Maybe it's Geico, maybe it's State Farm, maybe it's some smaller company that you've never heard of. You could also find an independent insurance agent to do it for you. You know, I think when it comes to Dave Ramsey, who's, you know, famous for personal finance stuff, he says this is actually his best money-saving tip, is to find an independent insurance agent who can shop around for you and get you a lower rate. Now, when it comes to car insurance and this, you know, sometimes the lower rate that you get is really just like an introductory rate to get you into the door. So this is why this is one of those ones that, you know, a lot of people will shop around every year for their car insurance, because car insurance tends to raise their rates. So, you know, you can decide if it's worth it to you. Maybe it's just worth it to do it one time. Maybe you want to just keep looking around every year. But definitely getting the service cheaper from a competitor is a viable option here. Can I downgrade my service? Maybe. This one, I mean, is one that I feel a little bit awkward offering advice on. I mean, your situation is different than mine. In some cases, if you have an older car, maybe it's okay to, you know, drop the collision insurance or something like that. I mean, you'll have to run the numbers and weigh the risks on this one yourself. So, I mean, the downgrading is a definite maybe. Can I bundle this with another service? Yeah, possibly a good route. You know, if you're a homeowner and you have homeowner's insurance from another company, maybe your company will offer you a discount to bundle the two. So that can be a good one to go for. Can I change my payment schedule? This also can be a good option. So the way that car insurance works is that you're signing up for a policy that covers a period of 6 months. So usually what happens is over the course of a year, you might not think about it like this, but you end up having two car insurance policies, one that runs from January to June and the other one that runs from July to December. But you pay every month. So you pay 1/6 of the price of the insurance premium every month on a monthly schedule. Most people do anyway. But there's another option, which is you can pay the full premium price up front. So usually it comes due on like January 14th or like the first couple weeks of January. So for the January to June policy, you'd be paying sometime between January 1st and January 14th-ish. And then in July, you'd pay again for the July to December policy. Now, not every company offers a discount for paying up front, but some of them do. So it is worth asking about. Last question, can I negotiate this down? Maybe. I'll admit I've never had any success here, but I've also never tried. I don't know any stories of anyone who has. The closest thing I can think of is like calling up your agent, or whether it's the agent from the company or your independent insurance agent who you're using to shop around and just ask if there's any discounts that you may be eligible for. Because that's one of those things, is that they often offer discounts, like, oh, if you're, you know, a safe driver, if you're this age, or if you, you know, have a AAA membership or whatever. And then, you know, when you sign up, you might not get all those discounts. So just by asking around, you can get it. But I don't know if you can actually like negotiate it down, but maybe. I mean, who knows if you haven't tried. So, I mean, if you tried and it works, for sure, again, hit me up, leave me a voicemail, let me know. But for right now, I'll just say, can I negotiate this down? Gets a definite maybe. All right, how about your internet? So can I cancel this altogether? Good luck with that. Can I get this cheaper service from a competitor? This one, man, I would love for this one to be the best option. It might be. So here's the bad news, which is that a lot of people, and I unfortunately am included in this, live in an area where basically you have a monopoly on internet access. So there's one internet provider, and it's just they're the ones you have to go with. But I have a friend who lives in an area with two providers, and basically what he does is once a year he switches between the two. Because every time he switches, you know, the other one's like, hey, we'll offer you the new discount, the new new customer discount to win you over from the competitor. And he says, okay. And so he switches, and then the other one's like, we want you back. We'll give you the new customer discount. And he says, okay, and he switches back. So that's a strategy that works for him. It's not a strategy that works for me. I've heard rumors that a competitor is coming into my area, but I think they're in my city. They don't cover my zip code, which, So I'm stuck with one provider who I hate. But I mean, whatever. It's internet, and I still pay monthly. Then there's the question: can I downgrade my service? Yeah, I mean, this can work, especially if you got suckered into a plan that's far more expensive than the one that you need. You know, the salesperson was just like, oh, you better just get the most expensive one because who knows what you might need, and you don't actually need it. I'll say in my experience that if you call them to try to downgrade, I mean, they will hate this. They will hate this. And so you'll get a prepared speech about how it's a bad idea. They'll ask you questions like, well, do you watch Netflix? Do you use multiple devices? And they'll try to get you to say that, oh, okay, you know, based on your internet usage, switching is a bad idea. Now, you know what? They might be right. I will say that probably it's worth trying if you're unsure. Like, so if they've planted the idea in your head that, like, oh, if you switch, you might have problems. Well, you can just switch and see if you have problems. And, you know, again, best case, it works and you save money. Worst case, your internet becomes annoyingly slow for a little while and you switch back. So, I mean, it's for sure worth trying. Can I bundle with another service? You know, it's the famous Star Wars Return of the Jedi quote, Admiral Akbar, it's a trap. So I'd be careful with this one. Here's why I say the salespeople, if you call them up, and I know everybody hates talking on the phone, but if you call these people up and they're going to suggest this idea to you, they're going to be like, oh, you can bundle with another service to save money. But they mean something different by saving money than what I mean. I mean, you pay less per month, and that's saving money. That's a sensible definition of saving money. What they mean by saving money is that you overall end up getting a discount on one service or another. So you're going to call them up, and this has happened where I've called them before about other things and tried to lower my bill, and they'll say, you know, hey, you could save money on your internet by bundling it with cable. And I'm like, I don't think I can. It sounds like that's going to be more expensive. They're like, oh, no. Could you get a discount? I'll be like, okay, you know, here's what I'm paying now. And then, you know, they're like, yeah, and here's what you'd be paying with, you know, the bundled service of cable and internet, and it's a discount of X. And I'm like, yeah, but I'd be paying more per month because I don't currently have cable, and I would have cable. And they don't understand how this is this doesn't work for me. I don't know why. It's because they're salespeople, right? Again, when you talk to these people, they're trying to sell you services that you don't need. So be careful about this one. Can I change my payment schedule? Probably not. Listen, internet companies suck. I hate it. I hate it so much. Can I negotiate? Now, this is the surprising one. This is where you expect me to just throw my hands up and say, okay, you can't work with internet companies at all. But actually, this is the one where I've had the most success, personally. So here's what I have. I pulled this off three times. Three different phone calls. Each time I've gotten roughly a $10 a month discount for 12 months on my internet subscription. So, it's like a, we'll call it a 15-minute phone call. It's probably less than that. But I hate talking on the phone, so we'll just round it up to 15 minutes. 15-minute phone call, and saves you $100. Not quite the 15 minutes could save you hundreds on car insurance, Geico pitch that you see the commercials of. But I mean, $100 for a 15-minute phone call is not half bad. It's a mildly unpleasant phone call. And the way the conversation usually goes, I'll call up and I'll say, "Hey, I'm unhappy with how much I'm paying for my internet. I'd like to lower my bill. What can you do to help me?" And they'll offer some kind of unhelpful solution, like, "Oh, if you bundle internet and cable, you could get a discount on internet, but you'd actually pay more per month total." And I'm like, what I have to do is I just have to say, "No, that doesn't work for me. I want to lower my bill. I'm hoping you can help me so, I don't have to look for a solution elsewhere. So what can you do to help me lower my bill?" I try not to ask them yes or no questions. This is something that I learned from Ramit Sethi of I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which is a very scammy title, but is a surprisingly helpful book and blog. And he teaches a lot of negotiation techniques. And one of you, don't ask yes or no questions, because if you ask them the yes or no question, it's like, "Hey, can we get me a lower, can you lower my monthly bill?" They'll say no. And you don't want to make it easy for them to say no. What can you do to help me is the question. What can you do to help me lower my bill? This is the problem as a customer I'm having, and I've been a customer for, X amount of time. What can you do to help me with this problem that I'm having? Eventually, if you keep pushing and maybe even ask to talk to a manager and different things like that, eventually they'll just magically be like, "Well, look at this. It actually looks like you're eligible for a discount." Which, first of all, it's like a game they play, and I'm like in my head thinking, like, if I'm eligible for a discount, why didn't you just automatically apply it, you scumbag company? But really, it's like that's code for, okay, we caved, and we're going to give you a discount even though we don't want to. So this strategy does work, and so three times, I've tried this, I think, or maybe four, something like that. There was one time I remember it didn't work. There was one time where I called them up and I didn't get anywhere. And I mean, listen, there's a chance that that can happen. And you hang up and you're angry and or upset or disappointed and mildly unpleasant emotion. But I mean, that's fine. These things happen in life. It's worth trying. It might not work, but it has worked for me several times, and so I've saved hundreds of dollars just for making a less than a handful of mildly unpleasant phone calls. And hey, that's worth something. All right, let's talk about your phone bill. So, can I cancel this altogether? Good for you if you can, but probably not. So, welcome to the 21st century. This is similar to the internet. Can I get a cheaper service from a competitor? And I think, yeah, this is the way to go. Especially if you're with one of those like big expensive carriers. And I know that when I talk about this, I'm, US centric. And hey, I've looked at my stats and only half of my audience is from the US. So thank you to everybody who is not from the States who is listening to this, and to everybody who is from the States who is listening to this. A lot of my specific examples, because I live in Gainesville, Florida, are going to be United States and might not apply elsewhere. But I mean, the principles apply. So, just thanks for hanging in there and applying it to your own situation. And so, when it comes to getting a cheaper service from a competitor, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile are the big ones here. The Sprint used to be one of the big ones. I'm not sure what happened to them. I never hear about them anymore. But those are sort of the big carriers, and I mean, they get you into these like longer contracts, and the rates are just much higher. So, you want to look to one of these smaller companies. So the ones that, I've seen that look pretty good, Straight Talk, Google Fi, Cricket. A couple of my friends have had success with Metro PCS. I've used Red Pocket. There's Mint Mobile is one of the ones that's out there. So these are the, and there's more, and some of them I haven't even heard of. There's a couple that I have heard of that I've forgotten about here. But these are the kind of low-cost providers that can save you a lot of money on your phone service. So I've had success with three of them. I think when I originally started paying my phone bill after college, I was with AT&T, and that was expensive. And then I switched to Straight Talk, and I was able to basically cut my bill in half. And then I switched to Cricket, because I found a deal with Cricket that was a little bit cheaper than Straight Talk. And then I switched again to Red Pocket, and because it was a little bit cheaper than Cricut. And the way I do it with Red Pocket is I don't actually, go to their website and sign up and, set up recurring monthly payments. Actually, once every 6 months, I go to eBay and I buy like a phone plan refill card, and I enter the code, and I get another 6 months. So that's just the cheapest way to do it. But it does require, once every so often, I actually have to go do something, which, I mean, personally, I don't mind. But if you mind, Red Pocket themselves, they do have a service that's like normal where you sign up and auto pay and autopilot and all that kind of stuff. Cricut has that straight. Everybody should have that where you can just, everybody loves that where you just give them your credit card and they just keep charging you for forever until you cancel. So can I downgrade my service? Yeah, maybe. So check with your providers and see if you can find a cheaper plan. And so the lever they love to pull is the data lever. So it used to be, like the minutes, how much talk time you have, and then they realized that now nobody cares about that anymore. And then it was the text, and again, now nobody cares about that anymore. So basically, all phone plans out there will offer unlimited talk and text, but the one that they try to use to get you to pay more is the data. And in many cases, they're not going to charge you for going over. So, Red Pocket, Cricut, these places. What they'll do is once you hit your limit, whatever your data limit is, 5 gigs a month, 6 gigs a month, 4 gigs a month, it's usually some kind of limit like that. Once you hit your limit, what they do is they'll basically like throttle, they'll downgrade your connection speed. And so your internet will be slower when you're not on Wi-Fi. But again, that's when you're not on Wi-Fi. So there's two parts to that. You can on the back end, if you went over your limit, you can just switch to using more Wi-Fi, or you can switch at the beginning before you run out to keep yourself from running out of data. You can just use Wi-Fi as much as possible. And again, I'm using my phone mostly when I'm at home. So like I'm recording this on my phone. I'm gonna upload it on my phone, but I'm not gonna upload it using my network connection, my data. It's gonna be uploaded to Anchor using Wi-Fi, and then that's how, you're gonna be able to hear it. So many cases you don't need unlimited data. I've never had unlimited data. I don't need unlimited data. So that's definitely one thing that you can look at. If you've got unlimited data, you even if you're with like a big carrier, you could just switch down to a cheaper plan, and that could work. So can I bundle this with another service? Maybe. If you have a company that's gotten into both phone and internet, there's a possibility for this. Not in my area. In my area, the internet company doesn't, or I guess maybe it's starting to offer a phone service now. In any way, I would never get phone service from them because they're terrible, and it's going to be more, and it's going to be a horrible customer service. This one, if it works for you, good for you. I just don't have a lot of confidence with this one. I prefer, getting my internet from one place that I probably have to because there's not a lot of options, and then getting my phone service from a cheaper provider. But I mean, you can check with this. Another, and if you have cable, which I don't recommend having cable, but maybe you can like, bundle cable and internet and phone from one company or something like that, and maybe that saves you money. I don't know. So check into that yourself. Can I negotiate? It seems unlikely, but to be honest, I've never tried. And again, this one, partly comes down to I haven't talked to a human being about my phone in close to a decade now. So right when I got set up with AT&T, I did the thing where you go into the AT&T store and all that, and you talk to the person there wearing their little blue shirt or whatever. But then I, ever since then, it's all been online. So it's all been like I've gone to the website, or again, like in the current situation, I've gone to eBay, and that's how I've done things. So maybe you can negotiate your phone service down. I don't know. Try it out. Let me know if it works. But I no guarantees there, and I have no scripts or anything like that for you to use. So let's talk about your gym membership. And I'm a firm believer in working out and health and fitness and all that kind of stuff. But when it comes to the question of can I cancel this altogether? Yes. And if you never go, you should cancel. And again, that's not me saying, oh, I don't believe in working out or, that you should take care of yourself. It's just a reality. Like, if you're not going, you shouldn't be paying for it. It should be pretty obvious. So, I mean, you do have a couple choices there, though. Like, you could just start going, but please at least do one of them, right? If you're paying for a gym membership and not going, don't just let that status quo keep. I mean, that's how the gyms make their money, is that people sign up and then they never go, and then the people who do pay get a nice gym experience because the gym is always empty, and a bunch of people like you get hosed because you're paying and you're not going. So either start going or cancel. Just don't tell yourself you'll keep membership active in case you decide to start going someday. This is a quote that loosely applies. It comes from Tim Ferriss in the 4-Hour Workweek. He says, "Someday is a disease that will take your dreams to the grave with you." Now, of course, that's talking about, you know, procrastinating on your deepest dreams and goals. But I think it's a good quote to remember, just because someday is a, it's not a word that you should be uttering. If you're uttering the word someday, you're probably thinking incorrectly somewhere in there, and you need to identify it and say, okay, I need to stop making this someday excuse. Someday is almost never a valid justification for doing anything. So, right, if your strategy is, I'm going to go to the gym someday, it's a bad strategy, rethink it. Can I get a similar service from a cheaper competitor? Yes. Now, this is heavily dependent on the options in your area. And, you know, one of the things you could do here is you could, instead of getting it from a cheaper competitor, you could, instead of outsourcing your fitness, which is basically what you're doing in a gym membership, you could insource it. Like, you could do it yourself. So you could just go for a run, or, you know, you could do calisthenics, or you could set up like a squat rack in your garage or something like that. Personally, I work out from home and have been for a long, long time. I have exactly one piece of exercise equipment. It's a 24-kilogram. So again, you're welcome for those of you who don't use the U.S. system of measurements. I didn't give you that in pounds. I gave you it in kilograms. It's a 24-kilogram kettlebell. For those of you who are from the U.S. who are just hopelessly confused about the metric system, which is better, I think it's roughly 53 pounds. You can go on Google and do the conversion yourself. Roughly 53 pound. Looks like a little cannonball with a handle, although I think everybody knows what a kettlebell is now. And that was a one-time expense. I honestly can't remember how much it cost. It was less than $100, but I can't remember if it was like closer to 60 or closer to 80, or I feel like it was one of those two. But this, and I work out with it 5 times a week. I have been for a while. And so this little kettlebell, I say little, and it is little, but it's heavy. Because I mean, these things, when you pick them up, it's like it weighs more than my kids, but like, oh my gosh, but it's so much smaller than they are. So that density really makes it feel heavy. But this one-time expense has done more to improve my fitness than 99% of gym memberships ever do for their customers. So just something worth thinking about. You know, I'm not saying everybody needs to go like me and just, you know, get a kettlebell, heavy kettlebell, but it's certainly an option. So can I negotiate? You know, I have no direct experience here. I find it hard to imagine that a gym wouldn't at least be willing to offer you a discount if you seriously threatened to leave. But maybe they're just so confident that they're going to, you know, beat you down and get you to not leave that they don't feel they need to use that particular incentive. I don't know. I have not been a member of a gym ever. But, I mean, hey, it's certainly worth trying, because you could see how it's in their best interest to give you a discount to keep you from leaving. So, yeah, I mean, definitely try it. All right, so let's talk about cable or Netflix or streaming services, all these kind of things. And you might have noticed I'm not going through all the questions for every single one every more, because a lot of the questions don't apply. With cable and Netflix and all these kind of things, really the biggest one that applies is, can I cancel these altogether? Now, this is a weird to talk about here, because this actually becomes sort of a big philosophical issue too deep to cover here, but I'll just make a couple of points. First of all, this is something worth thinking about. You have access to more high quality, free entertainment than you could ever consume in 1,000 lifetimes. I don't know what the most up-to-date stats are, you know, but you can hear these things about, like, on YouTube, which not everything on YouTube is good, but some things on YouTube are really good. But like every minute or every hour on YouTube, it's like there's you know, a billion hours or whatever the stats are. There's an absurd amount of content being uploaded every single second. And again, there's no chance you could listen to every song that's out there, watch every show that's out there, watch every YouTube video. even watch the ones that exist. And of course, you know, as time goes on, more and more, you know, the list is getting longer. So, I mean, you have an abundance and embarrassment of riches here. And the second point I'll make is chances are there are better, more fulfilling ways of spending your time. And this is why it gets into really a philosophical issue about, you know, how should you be spending your time? Now, I'm not judging people here because, like, listen, I watch Netflix. I have a Netflix subscription. I'm not sure I'll keep it forever, but I have a Netflix subscription. But listen, I mean, you got to be really, really careful with, you know, they call it the boob tube. I'm not against it, so I'm not like hardcore, like if you watch TV, you're a terrible person. But, you know, again, it's this Admiral Akbar quote, that it's a trap. And, you know, chances are it's a symptom of something else that's wrong downstream in your life. If you're just falling back to, like, you know, 2 or 3 hours of television. I'll say that, you know, in general, people watch more television than they think they do. So if you come up with, like, oh, I watch about an hour of TV a day. Well, chances are the real number is more like 2 or 3 hours a day. But, you know, it's one of those things where we all do it. I do it even still. But it's worth thinking about the state of your life and, you know, why do you feel the need to unwind in front of the TV every day? Is there something, you know, better, more energizing, more exciting you could be doing, right? Could you download Duolingo, the free app, and teach yourself Spanish? This is what I'm doing right now. It's a lot of fun. I just got some children's books from the library in Spanish, and they kicked my butt. So I can probably read better than a 4-year-old Spanish speaker, but I don't know the language anywhere near as well as a 4-year-old Spanish speaker. I do know, actually, a 4-year-old bilingual Spanish speaker, and I'm like, maybe I could help her learn to read as she helps me learn the language. I don't know. Anyways, yeah, philosophical issue. There's better things you could be doing with your time, and there's unlimited entertainment available to you anyway. So, I mean, for sure, I would land here as a helpful takeaway as you start to think about this issue. Because again, this is a sort of a philosophical issue and one you got to work through on your own that I can't necessarily guide you through. But I can say, like, hey, based on the fact that there's other things that you should be doing to improve your life and become more fulfilled ultimately. Because, like, learning a language will ultimately be more fulfilling than being entertained for a few hours a night. If there's these other things that you should be doing, we should at least come to the conclusion, and because, you know, money represents your life energy, you shouldn't be paying an outrageous amount on entertainment, and especially when you factor in the fact that there's more entertainment than you could even consume, even if you are wasting inordinate amounts of time consuming entertainment. So listen, cable, I would just say, is a bad idea. You know, it's hard for me to talk about, like, and make the right decision for you, but, like, listen, cable is expensive. It's exposing you to a bunch of advertisements, which is also not good for you. And I mean, yeah, just maybe like a Netflix subscription, right? What, like, you know, go through like Hulu, Netflix, Disney Plus, like which one do you actually use the most? Cancel the rest. This one's a great one too, also, though, that you can share if you have that ability. So if you know there's somebody you trust, you know, you have Netflix and you give them your password, and they have Hulu or Disney Plus or whatever, they give you your password. But I mean, just think about it. With all of these two, the last thing I'll mention is, you know, we mentioned this before with switching from, you know, internet and trying a slower speed and seeing if it worked. You can try canceling. I mean, you can come back. They'll be happy to have you back, and it's pretty easy to, you know, set that back up. But, you know, I mean, cancel it for a month, and like, how much do you really miss it? So again, you know, not to be a hypocrite here, I do have a Netflix subscription. That's the only one I have. I have no cable, no Hulu, no Disney Plus. A couple of these things we get because we share a login with somebody who doesn't charge us for it, thankfully. But I do have a Netflix subscription. It's, you know, it's not like I never watch TV, but it's something that I actively try to limit. And so, yeah, just think about it. All right, so when it comes to miscellaneous subscriptions, you know, which includes newspapers, magazines, journals, streaming audio like Spotify, or, you know, if there's some kind of Pandora Premium or YouTube Music or any of these competitors, or newsletters or food delivery or the monthly box of goods, the big question, just like with Netflix and these other cable, all that kind of stuff, TV, big question is almost always, should I cancel them altogether? And if in doubt, yeah, just cancel. Evaluate how much you miss it. Make a new decision if warranted. That's the, you know, again, people who offer these subscriptions offer them because they're sticky, and it's unlikely that you're ever going to be proactive enough to take the step to cancel them so they can just keep charging every month. So be proactive. Cancel them and then see, like, no, okay, actually, I missed that now that it's gone, and then you can reevaluate. Okay, so one that I'm going to mention, bonus one here, is credit cards. So if you have a credit card, first of all, the thing you should know is pay it off as soon as you can. Pay extra. You know, and I've done a post on this over at Money the Simple Way that you could look for called The Debt Trap, How Smart People Get Snared. When I break down the math on this, I mean, the bottom line is credit cards can cost you obscene amounts of interest over the years. The reason I'm mentioning it here along with these, and I wouldn't have ever thought about this, and again, this comes from that book, I Will Teach You to Be Rich. So Ramit Sethi, the author of that, he points out that this is actually a surprisingly good opportunity to negotiate. So you can potentially negotiate your interest rate down or even get late fees waived. And, you know, he actually even has like scripts in his book that help walk you through how to do that. So it's just worth mentioning. A lot of people have credit cards. If you have credit cards, you might not have ever thought about negotiating, but apparently that is a real possibility. Your mileage may vary in terms of if it works for you, but like, hey, I mean, even the chance of it working is worth doing something about. All right. So I've alluded to this before, but let's just come back and hit on it one more time. You know, the hidden hack with some of these things is sharing. And, you know, especially if you have friends that you trust or, you know, family members who are willing to do this with you. I have one friend who signed up for, you know, like a family plan, like a phone plan with a low-cost phone provider. I think it was Cricket, something like that. They offered like a, you know, you can get one line for this amount, or you can get like five lines for this amount. And, you know, only one of the five people lived in his household. Two more were family. It was like his in-laws. And so it was like himself, his wife, his in-laws. And then there was like one guy who was just like a single guy who was a member of his church. And so that they got this like five lines for $100 thing or something like that, or whatever it was at the time. And so they were all paying like $20 on their bills. Now, actually, I think there's, you know, some of the ones like with Red Pocket, I think I'm actually paying less than $20 a month now for my phone. But, you know, at the time, this was a pretty good deal. You know, one friend that I know, and he got grandfathered into this, but he started sharing his Amazon Prime account. They used to let you add, like for one account, you could add multiple email addresses. They don't let you do that anymore. So he split his Amazon Prime account between as many people as he could, and he split the cost too. So instead of paying whatever it costs a month, you know, like $120 a month or something like that, he's got like six people on there and they're all paying 20 or I don't remember the exact math on it, but he's sharing it. Now, if you're going to do that, something like that now, you'd likely need to create like a, instead of using your email address and login, you need to create like maybe a special new shared email address and login that you give everybody access to. You know, other examples of this though are like, I had some friends in college and they lived in, you know, apartments that were right next to each other. So like literally like the unit was just separated by a wall. And so instead of each of them paying for internet, it's like they just went in together and they bought like one of those signal extenders. I can't remember what they're called for the, you know, for the router though. It's like the thing that makes the internet signal go further. The idea is like, so that in your house, you have this huge house and you have the router over here, but you need the internet to reach all the way to another room. But like, hey, it works in apartments too. So they split the cost of internet between, you know, instead of having, you know, these guys are in unit A, these guys are in unit B, and they each pay the internet provider, you know, an inordinate amount of money each month. They each paid half of it, which that's pretty nice. And again, you know, the one where this maybe has already come up in your life is Netflix, Disney Plus, Hulu. What I've found is it makes some people really, really happy to share these services, especially like parents and in-laws. You know, they love giving that stuff to their kids. They're like, oh, yeah, we got Disney Plus, you know, use our login. And I mean, listen, if they offer, do it. And of course, in some cases, it's like you get that for free. And in some cases, they're like, hey, if you pay us, you know, half the bill, you can, you know, have the login, which I mean, either way, it makes it cheaper and you get the service. So, I mean, I say that's a quick win. So again, just remember, $83 a month. We can call it $84 a month. We'll round up, not just from $83.33 to $83.34, but we'll just call it $84. If you shave $84 a month off your bills, you'll save $1,000 in a year. And so maybe you can save like $35 on your phone and $10 on your internet. And hey, look, you're halfway there. So shop around for car insurance. You know, maybe find some subscriptions you no longer use. And it's definitely possible for a lot of you listening to this to save $1,000 with, you know, basically this one weekend mini project. You know, and I think the reason that I give this out as a goal is because $1,000 a year is big enough that it seems worthwhile, while $84 a month is small enough to seem achievable and to keep you motivated. But the big thing that I just want to, you know, instill in your head right now is that if you do this and you don't hit a goal, like you set the goal of $84 a month and you don't hit it, let's say, you know, you get $40-something a month and you only save $500 a month, like, hey, that's not a loss. You didn't fail. That's one profitable weekend. You didn't hit your goal. That's not the same thing as failing. You know, taking just a little bit of time to save $500, some of which you'll continue to save on an ongoing basis. I mean, like, listen, that's real money. And like we've covered, money is your life energy. So well done. All right, last thing to mention here is, you know, this strategy of the mini project of cutting the bills. This is just, I think, the best way for most people to get quick wins. If you want to think about quick wins beyond this, you know, the ways to save on the little things that aren't wasting your time, the biggest thing that you need to think about is taking willpower out of the decision. You know, I think in general that you want to focus on quick wins, big wins, and then switch over to income generation. But if you want to keep going with quick wins and see how far you can go before you hit diminishing returns, really what you have to do is you have to come up with some kind of a system. Because it can't just be on you every day to say like, oh, I shouldn't be buying that coffee or I shouldn't be buying that whatever little, you know, thing. Because the more you rely on that kind of willpower, you know, you only have so much willpower in a day. And you don't want to use it up on stupid little things like that. You want to use it on important things like, you know, like, hey, I want to procrastinate on starting a side hustle. And then you say, okay, no, I'm not going to procrastinate. We're going to use willpower to power through it. That's where you want to save it for, the more high return things. So let's say, as an example of a system, let's say that you get a soda every time you go out to eat. And maybe you don't, I don't know. But you come up with like a rule. We could call it soda on Saturdays. I love alliteration, right? So there you have the rule, soda on Saturdays. So the idea now is that you don't have to make a new decision every time you go out, which would deplete your ability to make decisions, deplete your willpower. You just follow a simple rule. If it's Saturday, get a soda. If it's not, get water. So on this particular example, your wallet and your waistline will thank you. And it's a nice thing because it's not like, oh, I'm giving up soda or I can't buy sodas anymore. It's like, oh, yeah, I'm, you know, making the choice to limit myself to soda on Saturdays. And, you know, be creative here. That's just one example. But the general principle is that if you want to save money on an ongoing basis on these decisions that come up, you can't be making a new decision every time. You have to come up with some kind of a system that just kind of keeps working so that you don't have to think about it again and again all the time, and that it just kind of fits into your lifestyle and becomes a habit or becomes a routine or whatever you want to talk about it with that. So, you know, once you're able to save up some money, you should think about investing your savings. And so we're going to talk about that, you know, again, the three pillars of personal finance that we talked about in the last episode. You know, personal finance in less than 10, where to spend less than you earn and invest the difference. So we're talking about spending less right now. We're going to switch to talking about earning more. And then we're going to switch gears on the podcast here and start talking about investing the difference. So yeah, once you're done with your quick wins project, you know, spend some time focusing energy on the big wins. Now, some of those take time, so you can basically switch focus to both big wins and income generation. And those are the things that we're going to talk about in subsequent weeks. So hopefully you've been armed in this episode with the tools to save yourself some money without too much effort. Yeah, so go out there and save some money. I will talk to you next week. All right, if you like this episode, please be sure to share it with somebody who you know that likes podcasts. It's one of those things where they say audio only converts to audio. So the people who just read stuff on their phone as they're scrolling through Facebook don't listen to podcasts, but people who listen to podcasts listen to podcasts, and you listen to podcasts. I'm so thankful for you. So if you know somebody who needs to hear this episode, be sure to recommend it to them, send it to them. Anchor.fm/Matthew Kent is the sort of landing page for this podcast, which is hosted by Anchor. But of course, they can find it on any podcast platform, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, whatever they use. So thank you so much for listening. Thank you if you pass it on. I'll talk to you next time.